Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 11.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins, it's a current of love.
This week we've got our draft pick signing deadline day update, the full minor league roundup for all seven Blue Jays minor league affiliates, and the conversation with Lansing Lugnuts play-by-play announcer Jesse Goldberg Strassler. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Today is the deadline for draft pick signing, so let's bring our listeners up to date on who has signed and who hasn't for the 2013 draft. Remember that the draft is now only 40 rounds, down from the 50 that it used to be, so we'll also include some of the non-drafted free agents that the Jays have signed. The biggest news of the past couple days is Alex Anthopoulos' announcement that the Blue Jays are not likely to sign their first-round pick, Phil Bickford. Despite the fact that the Blue Jays signed all of the other top 10 picks to underslot deals and have about $5 million to offer Bickford without being penalized by losing a draft pick, the deal just doesn't seem to be getting done. Anthopoulos hinted that there are, quote, factors at play aside from just money, according to a report by Gregor Chisholm at MLB.com. Slot value for the pick is just under $3 million. The Jays may or may not have gotten a steal in round two. High school righty Clinton Holland apparently had some damage in his pitching elbow found in an MRI, which enabled the Jays to drop their offer and sign Holland for only $467,280, which is just over $700,000 less than slot. The fact that Holland is damaged goods doesn't bode well, however, as their third-round pick, Patrick Murphy, who signed for $500,000, is coming off Tommy John surgery himself. Evan Smith, their fourth-rounder, a 6'5" lefty signed for almost $100,000 under slot, has already pitched one inning in the GCL. Daniel Leitz, their fifth-round pick, a community college lefty, also signed for well under slot and has been pitching for the GCL Blue Jays as well. Sixth-rounder Matt Boyd had a long season with Oregon State, going deep into the College World Series, and just signed his deal with the Blue Jays after taking some time off. He signed for $75,000, which is actually a pretty high total considering that he's a college senior with no real leverage over the Jays. Connor Green, a high school righty, signed for $100,000, still about $87,000 under slot for the seventh round, and has seen some GCL action already, while eighth and ninth rounders Mississippi State pitchers Kendall Graveman and Chad Giroto have signed for $5,000 each and have yet to play in the minors. Finally, 10th-rounder catcher Garrett Customs signed for $1,000 out of the Air Force Academy and has begun to play, but is expected to leave the organization in August to begin his career in the military. In rounds 11 through 20, all of the draftees have signed except for 11th-rounder Jake Brents and 17th-rounder Eric Lauer, both high school pitchers. The Jays are expected to make a run at Brents today at the deadline, but Lauer will probably not be signed. 12th-rounder Tim Mazza is now with the Bluefield Blue Jays after getting a few innings in the GCL. 13th-rounder infielder Tim LoCastro and 15th-rounder outfielder Jonathan Davis are also in Bluefield, while 14th, 19th, and 20th-rounders first baseman LB Dantzler, infielder Christian Vasquez, and outfielder Chaz Frank are in Vancouver. The two high school picks to sign in this group, 16th-rounder catcher Dan Jansen and 18th-rounder Pickering, Ontario pitcher Sean Ratcliffe, have both been assigned to the Gulf Coast League Blue Jays. In rounds 21 through 30, two are unlikely to sign. That's 22nd-round pitcher Sam Tews and 26th-round community college pitcher Cable Tanner. Seven have signed in those rounds. 21st-round catcher Mike Reeves' pro career is off to a big start, hitting over 400 in Vancouver, and he's joined by 23rd-round outfielder Brendan Kalfas, 25th-round left-handed pitcher Scott Silverstein, and 28th-round left-handed pitcher Matt Dermody, and 29th-rounder righty Garrett Pickens. Of this group, 24th-rounder Sean Hurley and 27th-rounder infielder Andrew Floridis are in the Gulf Coast League. 30th round pick, first baseman Rowdy Tellez, has a strong commitment to USC, but the Jays may try to use some over-slot money to lure him away at the last minute. In the last 10 rounds of the draft, there are several players who just won't sign. 31st round pick Bryson Selleck, 32nd rounder Josh Sawyer, 33rd rounder Edgar Cabral, 35th rounder Akoni Arriaga, as well as 38th through 40th rounders John Nunnally Jr., Zachary Levinson, and 40th rounder Antonio Ruiz. All except for Selleck are high schoolers, and Selleck didn't end up signing due to an injury and the fact that he has another year of college eligibility left. The only two signees in the 31st to 40th rounds were David Harris, an infielder who's playing with Vancouver, and Brett Barber, a right-handed pitcher who's now in Bluefield. Finally, that brings us to the undrafted free agents. The Jays signed pitchers Corey Gorman, Cale Wine, Joey Lovecchio, Phil Kish, Chris Rowley, and Kamakani Usui. All of them, except for Lovecchio, are with the Gulf Coast League Jays, while Lovecchio has since been moved to Bluefield. The Jays also signed infielder Kobe Kramer, Alexis Maldonado, Lydell Mosby, and outfielder Thomas Boomer Collins, with all of them being assigned to the GCL Jays, except for Maldonado, who's with Bluefield. And now the Minor League Roundup. The full slate of minor league affiliates are up and running, so there's lots to talk about. The Buffalo Bisons had a great week, going 5-2 to bring their record to 48-45 and close within 3.5 games of the Pawtucket Red Sox in the International League North Division. While the offense has been a bit sluggish, the pitching has really stepped up, giving up more than 3 runs in only 1 game this past week. Catcher Ramon Hernandez, recently signed to a minor league deal, was released, and first baseman and DH Luis Jimenez placed on the disabled list. Clint Robinson was called up from New Hampshire as well, and catcher Mike Nickias was placed on the temporary inactive list, while Jack Murphy was called up from New Hampshire, but probably only for a short while. Finally, Brett Laurie is now with the club and has only 2 hits in 12 at-bats and has struck out 7 times, and Chenming Wong has been assigned to the Buffalo Bisons after clearing waivers and getting the assignment outright. The New Hampshire Fisher Cats went 4-1 this week, despite the short respite for the All-Star break, and have moved to within 1 game of the pack of 3 teams that sit behind Eastern Division leader Binghamton. The Fisher Cats are 44-46, 12 games back behind the Binghamton Mets, but only a game back of the Trenton Thunder and the New Britain Rockcats, and a game and a half back of the Red Sox affiliate Portland Sea Dogs. First baseman Gabe Jacobo earned a promotion from Dunedin after Clint Robinson went up to Buffalo and made a big impression, going 3-for-4 in his first game with a home run. AJ Jimenez has come down to earth a little bit, hitting only .237 in his last 10 games, but he also hit his first home run of the season in AA this week. Andy Burns continues to hit for a low average in New Hampshire, but the 22-year-old has been progressing and hit his first 2 AA home runs on July the 7th, in the same inning, no less. He has also been hitting for more doubles and taking more walks while striking out less, particularly in the last 5 games. The pitching tandem of Stroman and Nolan have been excellent, with Nolan going 5 shutout innings, striking out 7, and giving up only 2 hits in his last start, and Stroman going 7 innings, giving up 2 runs on 4 hits, including 2 solo home runs, while striking out 8 in his start this week. The Dunedin Blue Jays went 4-3 over the past week and are now 8-11 in the second half and sit in second last place, 4 games out of the top spot in the Florida State League North Division. With the promotion of Gabe Jacobo, the Blue Jays' weak offense has been weakened even further and will have to rely on a speed game more than a power game. The only help that I can see coming would be a promotion to Kevin Patterson from Lansing. The pitching continues to be the strong point for this team, although it hasn't been as strong as it was in the first half. Aaron Sanchez's last start was his worst of the year, going only 3 innings, giving up 7 runs, although 4 were earned, on 6 hits and 3 walks. The Lansing Lugnuts have been mired in a horrible slump, losing 5 of 6 this past week. The only win came on a stellar pitching performance from Javier Avendano, who went 7 shutout innings that let his team's 1 run stand for a 1-0 victory. The Lugnuts are 4-16 in the second half and sit in 8th place, which is last, in the Eastern Division of the Midwest League. Stay tuned for more about the Lansing Lugnuts with radio play-by-play man Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. The Vancouver Canadiens went 4-2 this week and are in second place in the North Division of the Northwest League, two games behind the Everett Aqua Sox with a 17-10 record. Several standouts include the catcher Mike Reeves, a Canadian from Peterborough, Ontario, who leads the club with a .418 batting average, and Jordan Leyland, who is hitting .340 and leads the team with 8 doubles. Infielder Dickie Thon is red hot since last week, hitting .474 with a triple and raising his overall batting average to .309. There's not a lot of power there and still far too many strikeouts, but he's definitely opening some eyes. Pitcher Jeremy Gaboreski continued to lower his ERA but gave up 4 unearned runs in 6 innings this week on 7 hits and only struck out 2 batters. Overall, he's got a 0.93 ERA and a 0.79 whip by only giving up 22 hits and 1 walk in 29 innings, but he has only struck out 12. Since their 7-game win streak was snapped last Friday, the Bluefield Blue Jays have lost 5 in a row and haven't played since Tuesday due to bad weather. The Blue Jays are now at 10-8 and are a game back of the Burlington Royals and Pulaski Mariners for third place in the Appalachian League Eastern Division. Just about the entire offense has gone cold after starting red hot, and the only pitching prospect to have a strong outing in the last week was Alberto Tirado, who went 3 scoreless innings against Johnson City. Despite bad weather sweeping through Florida, the GCL Blue Jays played 5 games this week, going 3-2, and sit tied in first place at 8-7 with the GCL Yankees 1 team in the GCL Northwest Division. Shortstop Franklin Barreto has cooled off, but catcher Dan Jansen and outfielder Sean Hurley have both heated up. 18-year-old Jansen, drafted just this year, only played 2 games this week, but went 5-for-9 with 2 doubles and a walk. 21-year-old Hurley has been getting more playing time and hit in all 4 of his games this week, going 7-for-12 with a double and 2 triples. Pitching prospect Matt Smorrell got roughed up in his outing this week, giving up 5 runs in just 2/3 of an inning. That's all for the minor league roundup. Now it's time for the conversation with Lansing Lugnuts play-by-play announcer Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. Welcome back to the Blue Jays from Away podcast. I'm here with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the radio voice for the Lansing Lugnuts. Welcome to the podcast, Jesse.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's get right to it. The Lugnuts didn't have the best first half of the season as they went into the All-Star break, but they did show a lot of signs of really turning it on towards the end of the first half. The second half hasn't really come through on that promise, has it?
No, and we can pussyfoot around it a little bit, but the first half, the team's record was 32-37. Okay, you know, 5 games under 500. You can deal with that. In the second half, they started off 2-5, and then they dropped 10 in a row to tie the franchise record for most losses in a consecutive fashion. So now, after winning the final game of a series at Bowling Green, they are a proud 3-15.
Well, as a team, I guess that doesn't raise the spirits, but I'm sure there have been some individual performances within that streak that have at least given fans in Lansing, as well as Blue Jay fans, something to look forward to.
Well, I think the big guy right now is Emilio Guerrero. Guerrero is coming on. He only had a couple of doubles for his extra base hits in the first half, and let's be honest, they came into the first 4 games of the year. And now, recently, especially come June, and here we are into July, and he's hitting with extra base power. He just homered again, a 2-run shot at Bowling Green on Sunday. This was after hitting a dramatic 2-run game-tying home run against the Great Lakes Loons. His power has been evident. It's been impressive. He's working very hard to improve himself defensively, too. And on the base paths, he's stolen 11 out of 14 attempts. So Emilio Guerrero right now is the surprise star of the team.
Well, let's talk about Emilio. I don't think I saw him very much when I was with the team or visiting Lansing. I think he may have been on the DL at the time, but he definitely wasn't getting so much playing time. The question I have about him is, has there been an adjustment that he's made, or has he talked about, or have the hitting coaches there talked about any adjustments they've made that has really brought out this untapped, at least to this point, talent?
I think for him, and for all these players, we don't know how long a full season will affect them. Playing 140 games from April through September, for a lot of guys, they're getting wiped out. They're exhausted right now already, and they're hitting the wall. Emilio has not played very many games at all. And in fact, you just look at last year alone, he played 40 games, 24 in the Gulf Coast League, 16 for Bluefield. In that span, he batted just 221. And they jumped him up to Lansing. And in fact, he has gathered his second wind. The adjustment is not, let's say, put your hands here or try this leg kick. The adjustment is more, he's getting more time in. He's getting innings to play. He's getting at-bats. And the more he plays, the more comfortable he gets. The more chances he gets in the field, the more practiced he gets in fielding ground balls to his right and to his left. The more he faces pitchers, the more he starts understanding, oh, here's what I have to do against a pitcher who throws like this. It's simply coming with repetition.
Well, that's great. And of course, every player wants to play every day. But of course, the rigors of this minor league schedule and the fact that there are so many players on this team that need to get their reps in often makes it hard to do that.
Yes, but so the Blue Jays sent a mandate on down and they basically say, we want to see this many at bats for this player for this week. And that way, you know that for each player, they'll get that certain number of at bats for that week. Yes, so some players will not get the most regular of playing time. You'll see a couple of guys sit out a couple of days here, a couple of days there, but there's generally a fairly regular rotation, and the players are told by their manager and their coaching staff, be ready, here's how often we're going to use you.
Now, I do want to talk about defense a little bit, because defense has not been the Lansing Lugnuts' strength this season, and Emilio Guerrero, in particular, is a guy who has epitomized that. He's leading the team in errors, with 25, I believe, at the moment. And I think he seems to me almost like one of these players who come from the Dominican Republic or from Venezuela. And there seems to be a couple of these guys lower in the system, as well as Gustavo Pierre, who have a lot of tools. They're very raw, and it seems to take them a little bit longer to get a hold of the defensive side of the ball.
It just comes from playing time. If you want to ask, the example that's held up for any player who wants to try to make the major leagues and is trying to get through those fielding difficulties is Derek Jeter, because he was 19, he was playing in the South Atlantic League, and he committed 56 errors for Greensboro. And so you understand, there are good players who make a lot of errors too. The question is, are you improving? Are those errors coming because of laziness? Are those errors coming because of poor technique? What's the reason for it? And for Emilio, he's made errors on plays in the past that he's just not been ready for. Maybe the hop has taken him by surprise. Maybe it's the throw that's gotten a little bit off and it's his mechanics. Over time, those errors and the plays that they're coming on, they've decreased, and he started making those plays more and more often. So, yeah, every now and then, I'll make a throwing error here or a hop will eat him up. But it's, you can see with him that all of his practice is actually working and it's improving him. It's not to the point where the player's making the same mistake over and over and it's the same play and you just do not see any growth.
Well, that's obviously one of the most heartening parts of it. And to have another shortstop, or at least, you know, there are some shortstops who the ceiling may not be very high, but have been very solid at the top levels of the minor leagues. And I'm talking about Ryan Goins and Kevin Nolan. Both of them are getting into that 24, 25-year-old range and have shown that they can perform at those levels, but they're not standing out in particular. Excuse me. But it's nice to always have another guy coming up through the system who's showing both some power but also the ability to run and the ability to field. So if Emilio Guerrero can continue to improve, that would definitely be a name that people should be watching for in the Blue Jays prospect system.
That's nice, too, for Toronto. You want to have a wealth of depth at different positions. For example, take the catching spot. A couple of years back, so they had Travis d'Arnaud, they had AJ Jimenez, they had Carlos Perez, and you could go right on down the ladder all the way on up to JP Arencibia. When you've got that depth, you can deal from the depth, and the future will tell on how things go. But Carlos Perez was packaged in a deal with Houston to attain some pitching, and Travis d'Arnaud was sent off to the Mets to attain R.A. Dickey. You'd rather have the depth. You'd rather look up and down the system and say, we can trade one or two of these guys because we have the guys still coming up through the system. For the Jays, they know they've got AJ Jimenez still coming at the catching spot and maybe Santiago Nesi beneath them. For the shortstop spot, Joel Lugo is intriguing and you can look right on down. You want to develop as many prospects as possible along the ladder. It's not enough to simply have one guy that you're counting on.
Well, since you brought him up, I was going to go there next anyway, so let's talk a little bit about Santiago Nesi, who we could probably consider to be the next guy with high potential at the catching position in the depth chart now that Darnot is gone and now that Lopez is gone. We've got A.J. Jimenez, who I did see in New Hampshire, who looks very impressive, but we also have Santiago Nesi with you in Lansing, and he's had his injury troubles this season, so he hasn't had nearly as many at bats as he would like to have. What have you seen with Santiago? And I did hear your interview with him about the base running mistake he made, and maybe you can share that with some of our listeners in case they didn't have a chance to hear that as well.
Santiago would rather it be forgotten, but because of YouTube and because of Deadspin and everywhere else, it's just going to keep on living on. So this was a Monday night, a homestand finale against the Great Lakes Loons. And the Lugnuts had won 10 of 11 games against them in the first half, but during the second half, they lost the first two. So they're trailing, going to the bottom of the eighth inning with two outs. Emilio Guerrero hits a game-tying homer. So we're down. Now the game is tied up 4-4 to the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Lugnuts load the bases. Two outs, and a 3-2 pitch to Chris Hawkins is slapped right back through the middle. Base hit center field. In from third base comes Dwight Smith Jr., and the Lugnuts win, or so we thought. Santiago Nesi got overexcited. And instead of running on down to second base, touching the base, and then celebrating with his teammates, he celebrated early. He greeted Hawkins as Chris rounded first base, and they all jumped together. And meanwhile, the Great Lakes Loons forced him out at second base because he never got down there. And the Lugnuts ended up losing in 10 innings in a game that they thought that they had a walk-off win. But Santiago, no, in speaking with him, he understands what happened, and he's very much a kid, and he's working hard on a number of different things. Number one, his English is getting better and better, so he can break down that barrier. He's originally from Venezuela, and now his family all lives in Florida. Now, immediately after that game, he had his first two home runs of the season in Lake County. Plus, he threw out a couple of runners trying to steal, so it did not affect his play on the field. Both of the home runs came with two strikes. Both of the home runs came to the opposite field, so we can see his power. He's a big guy. He's 6 feet, 2 inches tall, 220 pounds, and he does hit with great power. He draws walks, so he has an eye for the strike zone as well, and he's really young. He's just 20. Now, I would think Santiago is going to come back here to Lansing for another year unless they want to push him up through the system. And I would say that because A.J. Jimenez played for the Lugnuts in 2009 and wasn't much. Maybe you could see flashes, but he came back in 2010, and now you could see something out of him. Carlos Perez joined the Lugnuts in 2011, and he was all right. He was okay. They were expecting him to be great. Came back in 2012. Now he was a prospect, and he was dealt off to Houston. So I think Santiago's getting this year under his belt. It has been a frustrating year for him. Beyond the on-field, he suffered a concussion. He's pulled his hamstring, so he's spent a ton of the time on the shelf this year. He simply needs games to play in. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back in Lansing, and then next year he really does have a breakthrough year.
Well, absolutely, and they say that catchers take a little bit longer to develop than anyone else because there is so much responsibility placed on them in learning how to call games, how to hold the running game in check, as well as contribute to the team with the bat.
Well, offensively, I think that catchers are now being excused if they can't hit, as long as their defense is great, as long as they can frame up pitches and call a good game and control the running game. If you can provide that, your offense is a bonus. So I think if Santiago Nesi makes it up to the major leagues as, let's say, a 250 hitter, draws walks, and hits 15 to 20 home runs, if his defense is superb, he'll be just fine. And the question will become, how is his growing curve at calling a good game, at playing defense, at controlling the running game? If he continues to progress in those areas, he is going to hit for power.
Well, that's great to hear. It's always good to hear about players who not only are maybe performing at a very high level, but players that you can see with potential to do so. Let's change the topic to somebody who just had a brief pit stop in Lansing, and that was Brett Laurie. Laurie didn't get any hits in his 6 at-bats while he was there, but I'm sure he contributed a lot to the clubhouse and a lot to the enthusiasm on the field.
Well, Brett Laurie is one of those guys, he grabs your attention no matter what he does. He can simply be standing at his position at third base, and there is energy to him. Our guys are saying they've never seen anyone as intense as him. They called a players-only meeting, and Brett Laurie basically very quietly took charge and spoke up and said, okay, here's what you guys need to do in order to break out of this losing streak that you find yourselves in. So, yeah, in the clubhouse, in terms of his off-field preparation, in the cage, in his stretching, he really did affect these Lugnuts in a positive manner.
And would you think that because he's actually not that much older than some of these Lansing Lugnuts, I believe Laurie's only 23, that he can relate a little bit better to some of these players?
Maybe so. I don't know if age matters as much as if you come down and you're in the major leagues. And so maybe his off-field and everything like that, he can relate entirely in music, and he's got the beats, et cetera, et cetera. But the players respect if you've made it. And he came through the Midwest League. He was a Wisconsin Timber Rattler when he was a Brewers farmhand. And so all the guys around know he's where they want to be. If they're going to play back in Lansing or elsewhere in the Midwest League, they want to be rehabbing on their way back to the majors. And so they can talk to him. They can say, what do we have to do to get there? What did you learn? What can you tell us? That's where he really helps.
Well, that's obviously fantastic, and we hope that the players take everything that they could have gotten from Brett Laurie. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the pitching, although we haven't talked about it yet. The pitching was such a big part of the team when they were really on that good streak in that first half. You got an almost perfect game from Kramer Champlin. You got fantastic performances from Daniel Norris when he was really getting into a rhythm, and Roberto Osuna before he hit the DL. And the pitching really has not been nearly as good this half. Is it just a matter of fatigue with a lot of these players getting to points in the season where they haven't thrown this many innings before?
I think it's a little bit adjustments. At the very start of the year, the Midwest League batters didn't know what to expect from our pitchers, and now they know what to expect, and so it's up to our pitchers to adjust, and it's up to them to continue to progress onward. With Osuna and with Daniel Norris, injuries have gotten in the way. Disabled stints and their youth has gotten in the way. With the rest of the guys, and Javier Avendano has started to pitch a little bit like we thought he would. Taylor Cole has started to pitch a little bit like we thought he would. The bullpen has been solid with Kadish and Zakula and Will Browning. But with those starting pitchers, they still have a lot to learn. They still have a lot of adjustments to make. And we will see if they make those adjustments. We will see how they progress, because the results will be dramatic. This is not a league that gets difficult once you figure it out. This is a light bulb league. When Casey Lawrence figured out this league, and Casey does not throw hard at all, but he just suddenly started spotting up his fastball, working out of it, and suddenly it became very easy. Ben White, the same thing. White does not throw hard, and yet he went from being a middle reliever to being a spot starter to being one of the more consistent pitchers in the starting rotation. So I think the Lansing Lugnuts pitchers they've virtually reached a crossroads. And the question is, how will they adjust as we get into mid-July and then into August?
Now, you did mention Daniel Norris. Daniel Norris is back off the disabled list. How did he look? He did pitch in one game since he's returned, and it was, I guess, he must have been on a very short pitch count as well. From what I believe, it was 1 2/3 innings. He gave up he didn't give up a run, but he did give up several hits and a couple of walks, but managed to strike out 4 batters.
With him and with Aaron Sanchez, their ceilings are so high that you just wait for them to start throwing with as much consistency as they can. As soon as they get to the point where they have mastered their command, where they've figured it out, and now all of that stuff, for Norris, fastball change, also a curve and a slider, when he can get it all to go where he wants it to go, he'll be just fine. But right now, he'll throw a great pitch, and then he'll miss his spot. A great pitch, and then once again, he'll miss. And so because of that, he'll go 3-2 on this batter, he'll go 2-2 on that batter, and yeah, the pitch count gets high. In that outing, One inning, he loads the bases, he walks a couple, oh, he strikes out the side. In the next inning, once again, another strikeout. Oh, but look, there's a hit here and a walk there, and now he has to come out of the game because he's tossed so many pitches. So when he starts to get to that point where he can throw strikes and then get the breaking stuff out of the zone, getting the batters to chase, he's going to pitch really deep. But man, is his stuff good.
Well, I do look forward to being able to get a chance to see him, whether it's this year or next year. Another guy that I also would love to see, and I just seem to have horrible timing when it comes to getting out to some of these places and seeing some of the top prospects, is Roberto Osuna. And Osuna, when he came back from the DL from his elbow injury, he came out like gangbusters with two great starts. But since then, he had a few poor starts and has since gone back on the disabled list. So what could you tell us about him?
Well, his velocity was not down. His velocity was right there in the low to the mid-90s. However, he was getting hit a ton, and that is weird. We talked to one scout. The scout goes, I don't care what's going on. With his kind of stuff, nobody should be barreling him up. And he's, once again, he's a four-pitch pitcher. He's got that great change. The breaking stuff is outstanding. And the Lake County captains, who have an all-right lineup, were destroying him. 10 hits and 7 runs in an inning and two-thirds. And so something wasn't right, and the Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos and Tony LaCava were both in attendance. And so it makes sense that he'd be on the DL, get him some rest, get him back to where he's right, and we'll see how things go from there.
And the luxury, if you can call it that, of the minor league disabled list is that it's only 7 days. So it may not, you don't have to sort of start from scratch in building a pitcher up when they've been idle for 2 weeks like they are in the major leagues.
Exactly. And for Osuna and Norris, you don't have to question their heart. They're going to work as hard as possible. And sometimes you just need to say to both of them, relax and get out there and throw the ball. Just relax. They study their film. They're trying to figure out making adjustments, trying to see what they can do that the next time out will be much better than the time before it. And over the course of a long season, oh man, you can truly wear yourself down. You can wear yourself out. And it's good to get those mental health days and relax a little bit. So, especially because for both of them, Norris is 20 and Osuna is 18, they have the time. Time is on their side. They have the stuff. They're already up pitching in the Midwest League. Things will be all right for them in their future.
So who do you think on this pitching staff, at least to start with, who is somebody that people may not be familiar with? I know we have talked about Will Browning. We had an interview with him on the podcast a little while ago. You mentioned Ian Kadish. Is he a guy that you think will be moving through the organization fairly soon or will be making a little bit more noise?
Well, the task at hand for him in the Midwest League, he's accomplished it. He comes in, he challenges with his fastball. He's got a cutter and a slider. Comes in, throws strikes, strikes you out, doesn't walk anybody. What more can you ask of a guy?
Well, exactly.
Kadish is doing his job. Will Browning is doing his job. Eric Sekula is doing his job. I think all is well with those guys. Every now and then, maybe there's a hiccup here or a hiccup there. But whatever the Lugnuts have asked of them, I think that they've provided it and provided it in spades.
I definitely agree. When I look at Ian Kadish's statistics, he's only got 11 walks in 43 and two-thirds innings to go with 57 strikeouts. So that's obviously a fantastic ratio, and he's really commanding the ball well.
I think basically for him with Lansing, he came back for a second year and he's made the adjustments and he's been one of the more reliable pitchers in that bullpen.
And one more guy from that bullpen that I just want to touch on. We talked to him as well when I was in Lansing. That's Justin Jackson, who has, it looks like he's struggled a little bit with his control, but that might be expected for someone who's spending his first year since high school as a pitcher.
Justin is to pitching what I would say Emilio Guerrero and Carlos Ramirez are to hitting, where you just say, relax, get some more games in, get some more time in, do not put pressure on yourself to be a major leaguer right now, and the more games you work, the better you'll get. Justin's got his velocity, he's got his breaking stuff and his off speed, and he just needs to keep on throwing the ball and getting a little bit better every single time out.
Great. And is there anybody on the offensive side and the position players that you want to bring someone, our listeners' attention to? We've talked about Dalton Pompey in the past. Is there anybody else that you think has really been contributing well or really been flying under the radar a little bit?
Well, Dwight Smith Jr. was a very high pick, and yet I talk to a lot of folks and they go, well, he's not that toolsy. Okay, but here's what he does. We can play him in left field or in center field. He can cover ground, he can steal bases, and he steals them smartly. He rarely gets caught, and at the plate, he gets on all the time. He draws walks, he collects base hits. Every now and then, he shows off some power. He's still very young. He's 20. He won't turn 21 until after the year. So for Smith, after what was last year a very disappointing year, this has been a very positive campaign for him in 2013, and so I'm very eager to see where things go for him after this. And then the second guy, Jorge Flores, because of his height, he's 5'5", 5'6". He can play shorter, he can play second base. He does not strike out, he draws walks. He's quick enough to steal some bases, although he's still trying to figure out getting that good jump. At the plate, he'll fight you for all you're worth, and then he'll line a base hit into the alleyway. Jorge's a guy to keep your eye on. Every team that he's on, he makes them better, not worse.
Well, I personally am a big fan of Jorge Flores. I like to call him Mighty Mouse because of the power that he does show for a guy with such a small frame. The one thing actually that I have noticed about the base stealers in Lansing is the very high percentage that they steal at. You mentioned Emilio Guerrero earlier, who's stolen 11 in 14 attempts. Dwight Smith Jr. has stolen 16 in 19 attempts. And Dalton Pompey has been unbelievable, stealing at a 90% rate at 27 in 30 attempts.
Well, the Lugnuts coaching staff and the players are very aware of what the catcher's pop time is, what the pitcher's time is. They know exactly how long it takes whoever is in the game, how long it takes them to get to the plate, how long it would take for a throw to get down to second base. They go at the right time. They're very aggressive. And I'm sure they would all like those numbers to be even higher.
Well, of course, but they do have opposing teams to deal with as well. And sometimes, whether it's luck or skill, there is skill there, and you can't get them all, can you?
No, you can't. But they've been pleased so far, and I think right now the team is in a bit of a hitting doldrums. Once they start getting going again, you'll see those stolen base numbers start rocketing up once more.
Great, and we always want to see the Lansing Lugnuts getting on base. We always want to see them winning the ball games, and we hope that they can be a much better record in the games coming up.
Well, look, these have been the dog days of summer recently. They haven't hit well, they haven't pitched well, and so once they snap out of this thing, once a couple of the bats start catching fire and a couple of the pitchers start taking charge, that's what you need. You need those guys to start carrying you through these parts. It can't just be one or two guys. You need four or five or six of them. And that's when things will get an awful lot more fun around Lansing, Michigan.
Well, we hope so. And we want to thank you, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the radio voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. And thanks for joining us on the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Best of luck to the Lansing Lugnuts and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
That wraps it up for episode number 11 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the play-by-play man for the Lansing Lugnuts, for joining me. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Jays From Away. We won't be here next week. We'll be down in Bluefield, West Virginia, checking out the Bluefield Blue Jays, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Come on back and go Jays, go!